Hi, this is the operator. Need to inform all participants that today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would like to introduce your host. We have Ms. Gisela Gruber-White. Ma'am, you may begin.
Would you like me to do a quick roll call?
Yes, please.
Yeah, sure, Gisela. That would be lovely.
Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call, we have Avery Doria, Wolf Knowlton, Ron Androff, Ray Fassett. From staff, we have Glenda Saint-Géry, Julie Headland, Ken Bauer, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We have apologies from Rob Hogarth, but also remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Ray.
Thank you very much, and welcome, everybody. So this is the meeting of the GCOT. This could be potentially our last substantive meeting on issues here. We have a deadline of June 1st at the latest to get our various tasks over to the OSC for their review. Our actual objective is to accomplish that within the next few working days at the latest, based on the results of our discussions today. So, with that said, I think the two main areas of discussion today involve Section 3.8, and these are, of course, with regards to the rules of procedure, or also what I'm seeing now referenced as well as GOP, which I assume stands for GNSO Operating Procedures.
Yeah. Ray, Julie's just disconnected.
Okay.
So she's hearing what you're saying, but you can go on.
Great. Thank you. So Section 3.8, which is absences, there's some work for us to do there, and the other has to do with Chapter 4, voting. So with that said, I'll recommend that we start with 3.8 unless someone would rather go right to Chapter 4. Not hearing anything. First of all, let me just open it up for general discussion or questions that anybody may have. Obviously, Ken has sent some substantive work our way to review certain documents. I think it's pretty clear how to, what the intentions are, but also explanatory notes were included in a few of his emails. So let me just open it up for any discussion. Is there anything that anybody wants to bring up with regards to Section 3.8 or Chapter 4?
And Ray, I'm sorry, this is Julie. I inadvertently dropped off, and I'm back on. Thanks.
Sure. So, Wolf, Ron, Avery, anything, or do we want to just go straight to 3.8 and see where we're at?
Mm-hmm. This is Ron. I would go straight to the document chair, unless Avery has any thoughts, because I think it was Avery's comments that precipitated these amendments.
Yes, I agree with Wolf.
Okay.
Apologies.
Okay, so let's go right into 3.8, and if everybody has it open, there we can see what the proposed changes are. So I had a question under 3.81B. One, where it's been deleted, that the clarification that such action will not reduce the denominator in any vote. What was the logic behind taking out that clarification?
This is Ken. Excuse me. Just give me a second here to catch up.
Yeah.
I think it isn't needed there. Ray, I think is where I sort of came out. In other words, if you have an unplanned absence, well, we've stated that in other places in the document that anything that is not a yes, the denominator never changes.
Okay.
And let me just see. You know what? Look at 3.8.5.
Okay.
I think I included it there instead, so it wasn't duplicated.
Okay. Well, that's all right, because I read that one a few times myself, and it didn't strike me as to what that was about. I'm going to read it. This is new 3.8.5. This is a new edition. Any occurrence of absence or vacancy that is not declared in advance to result in an abstention from voting, as provided in this section, will be recorded as absent, and such action will not reduce the denominator in any vote tabulation for the affected House. Actually, I understand what that says now.
Good. So that's the reason I removed it from up above, because I put it at the bottom to cover any case of unplanned non-attendance.
Okay, so any occurrence of absence or vacancy that is not declared in advance. I wonder if he can just put a comma right after the word advance and take out to result in an abstention from voting. I know what you're doing there. You want to clarify that there is a remedy. But I'm wondering if it makes this section easier to understand if you just put a comma right after in advance.
Can I recommend a different, perhaps?
Yeah.
Correction?
Yeah, please.
Right. So anyhow, I might think that any occurrence of an absence or a vacancy, and putting in an article might help, that is not declared in advance. And then I would change the dependent clause there, as opposed to result in an abstention from voting, but something like, which would result in an abstention in voting as discussed in section blah, you know, or as provided in this section, and then go on as it was. So basically making it a more dependent clause. You put the comma in when you were reading it, and that's why you were able to parse the sentence. But without a break there, and putting a comma and then just to result, the phrase doesn't quite scan correctly for reading. But you know, that's kind of my recommended rewrite.
Yeah, so I think we are wordsmithing a little here. Does anybody disagree with the intent?
No.
Okay, so I think we're in a wordsmith mode here.
Yeah, this is Ken. I'm wondering. I've been reading it back and forth myself, trying to fix it. I agree that it's awkward. I'm just wondering if we actually need the that clause. In fact, I don't have this on. When I made the change and then I delete something, it doesn't show up as a track change. I'm going to have to accept it and then change it.
No, you don't.
I don't.
You don't need the clause. I mean it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to read it without the to result part. Any occurrence of absence or vacancy that is not declared in advance, as provided in this section, will be recorded as absent. Yeah, I don't think to would result in an abstention from voting is needed there.
Yeah, and I guess that's what Ray was suggesting in the first place.
I think so, yeah. Are you okay with that, Aubrey, if we just take that part out?
Okay.
All right, then I'm going to go ahead and accept that change.
Okay, so I think with that,
it was speaking. Could you just repeat the clean section right now, the clean phrase?
This is Ken. Be happy to. 3.8.5 now reads, any occurrence of absence or vacancy that is not declared in advance, as provided in this section, will be recorded as absent, and such action will not reduce the denominator, et cetera.
Okay.
Now, I owe an apology to the team and to Aubrey in particular because I just sent an email to this effect, but no one's probably seen it yet.
Okay.
Yeah. when I saw, Aubrey, your note that said, thanks for the quick response, I thought that was it. I didn't look any further in the document to see
my
that there
fault.
Were other things added.
Okay.
So I completely missed all of that. Fortunately, most of it was okay. But the part about the NCA, I didn't get, and therefore I went ahead with what I thought was the original. So, and that's going to apply here in this section. If you look just north of 3.8.5 in that 3.8.4C, I took out subject to applicable remedies. Now, so maybe we should have some discussion Well, maybe we could see if everything else is okay in this section. Then maybe it's time to talk about the NCA issue.
Okay, so let me just clarify for me and for anyone who might listen. So this issue does pertain to Section 3.8, absences, and specifically 3.84C.
It could. I think that's part of the larger discussion. I think what we might want to try to do here is to think a little bit about the NCA positions and what possible remedies we want to apply under different circumstances. For example, abstention, vacancy, absence, leave of absence, and any of those things that we've currently identified where remedies might apply. We have basically extracted them all away at this point from applicability to the NCA position, and that wasn't necessarily what Ivory had in mind. So, and it may not have been what the team had in mind. I thought that's what the direction we might be heading. So I pushed it in that direction, but we can back up from there for sure. All the changes can be undone.
Of course. So, okay, so at a high level, there's definitely validity to the point Aubrey raised, which was really a good point, which is, you know, the houses aren't themselves entities to be creating procedures or policies or et cetera. That's not their intent, and we all agree with that, right?
Agreed.
Okay, so now taking the next step, each house is provided NCA, right? So each house considers they have an NCA. And I know there was some discussion on how NCAs get assigned. I think we need a little education on that. How are NCAs assigned to a given house?
That's actually a really good question. This is Aubrey. And I'm not actually sure how that's going to work out, because while it was worked out specifically last time, because they had already been, generally assigned by the NOMCOM, and the NOMCOM wasn't willing to go back and say, I have to assign one to this house and one to that house, they basically said, sorry, figure out some other scheme, don't leave it up to us. Now, my assumption, though I do not know this, was that the GNSO was going to ask the NOMCOM this time to pick its assignments of NCAs per house. I do not know, and perhaps someone will have to check with NOMCOM on this, whether they could juggle them about or they were only going to fill the vacancy, let's say, for example, this time it is both of the house ones are actually up for renewal, I believe. No, only one of them. Only the one in the contracted parties is up for renewal this time. And so I don't know whether the NOMCOM is going to say, okay, a new contracted party NCA is, or whether the NOMCOM is going to say, okay, well, we are moving, the homeless one to the contracted party house and moving the non-contracted party house to the homeless and putting the new one in such, or whether they're just going to fulfill it. But at the moment, I believe NOMCOM is going to do the choosing by some method.
Hmm. That kind
I don't
has
know
been
if anybody on staff has more opinion to add, more information to add than that.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Ken, I do not. I know we initially wanted, we asked, or were intending to ask the nominating committee to make the assignments. That obviously wasn't done the first time around. I'm going to follow up.
Olaf would be the one to know for sure, as he's the mentor to the NOMCOM, I believe. Or is he not? No. I forget who the mentor is to the NOMCOM. I think it's not Olaf, but I'm not positive.
That might be a little bit of useful information for us. So the plan is for the NOMCOM to assign to a specific house. That is the plan?
That was certainly the GNSO's request. And
all right, that's even better.
The only reason that they didn't do it last year was because the request came in too late for them to take it into account during their deliberation.
Okay, so that was the GNSO request was for which was representative of broad stakeholder groups, was for the non-com to make a decision as to which individual is to go into which house.
I believe so.
Okay, now follow that logic. Follow that logic, okay? So that would tell, that would indicate to me that when they're going out and interviewing and putting in their qualifications, they are distinguishing one house from another house.
A contract. I believe so.
Okay, so if we follow that logic a little further along, it appears to me that there is an intent that one NCA is qualified to represent that a particular house versus the other house. So it would seem, now following this through, it would seem to me that just interchanging one NCA for the other NCA is really not logical.
That's where I would probably disagree with you.
Yeah, I know, and because I saw your comment, I understand the comment, which is, look, non-com, they share, no matter who you are as a non-com, you share a common thread that you're representing everybody outside of ICANN. I don't know how else to put that.
Put it, you're representing the interests as you understand them of people outside ICANN. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but then what we're looking at is a GNSO recommendation that the NOMCOM actually put forth volunteers that are specifically qualified for a given house. That to me does not make, that to me throws into question whether they are in fact interchangeable, if you will. So there's my, I want to throw that thought out there. Now, does anybody else have any thoughts on that point?
This is Ken. I'm trying to follow here the logic. So, it always helps me to use an example. So, let's say we have the nominating committee did in fact assign somebody to a specific house, and they did so for very good intentional reasons, right? And so, you have a contracted party NCA, voting NCA, and that individual needs to abstain for some reason that we've, you know, that we've already articulated. We have defined the concept in the procedures of an appointing organization. And in this case, the appointing organization is the NOMCOM, right? Just stipulated that. But I don't think it's going to be practical for us to go back to the NOMCOM to get instruction or proxy or some other sort of thing. I don't think they're a standing body. Are they, Aubrey?
No. I mean, yes and no. There's always a NOMCOM, but that's beside the point. Right. But they do, but I guess what I'd add is they do appoint a non-house NOMCOM person. Now, they can certainly appoint a non-house NOMCOM person that is an adequate substitute for either and such. So.
And that was your thought.
That's my thought, basically, is that there is a non-voting member of the NOMCOM, a NOMCOM appointee who is designated as non-voting at all times.
That's a third one.
That's the third one. So to basically say that when there is such a case, and it makes an easy rule, too, when there is such a case, the vote falls to that one. If, you know, that one is otherwise absent, well, then I guess we fall down to there being no option because there is no standing. You know, there's no way NOMCOM can do something like that.
All right. Okay. All right. So let me try and understand where I was coming from and relate to what you just said. So while it may be true or may not be, but let's just take our argument, it may be true that the contracted party house NCA may not be interchangeable with the non-contracted party's house NCA. There could be reasonable truth to the idea that either house's NCA is interchangeable with the non-house NCA. Is that what you're saying, Aubrey?
Yeah, that's basically what I'm saying, is that you've got a reserve standing there all the time, participating in everything, but never voting.
So
it's almost like there's a ready reserve player.
So this is Ken. I'm just following through. Under all other circumstances of abstention, we require an appointing organization to make a determination as to proxy. And so I'm just following up. In this case, what we would say is if a voting NCA is going to abstain, we'll just take that case for now,
yep,
then it's that individual who decides to proxy his or her vote to the non-voting NCA. Or we make it, it's an automatic. If an abstention occurs and the non-voting NCA is present, the vote proxies automatically, or is there a decision point, do you think?
I would have thought it was automatic, and that takes out, makes it clean, but, you know.
I like the cleanness of that.
And,
Ron,
then it deals with the, and then it deals with the conflict of interest, because you're not deciding that someone does. It's, I'm abstaining for, you know, this reason, therefore, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm absent, it's there.
And then if the non-voting NCA, by virtue, well, hang on a second. Is the non-voting NCA a council member?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because we stipulated that, I think in the procedures, we require that proxies have to go to council members.
Oh, yeah, no, they're
I don't think
council members, they just don't have a vote.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so I think that's good. So we can definitely proxy the vote then to the non-voting NCA as a council member. And during that, now, then at that point, if the non-voting NCA says, well, I'm not voting, I'm abstaining too, then it just dies. It just ends. We can write that in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so does anybody think that the stakeholder groups or houses might have an issue or a problem with that?
I'm thinking maybe, which is why I was raising the points I was. So...
would you mind, Ken? Just this is Ron. Would you mind just restating now, kind of where this comes out, just in one sentence, so I'm understanding exactly where
sure.
It ended up.
Yeah, for now, just the case of an abstention. A voting NCA in one of the houses says I cannot vote on this measure for these reasons, and I register the abstention. Automatically, the non-voting NCA is notified to step in and vote on that issue.
And so then that brings the question up, does, as I understand it, Aubrey, you were an NCA, so
yep.
You can probably be the best one to answer this. In this case, then, because in the other cases, the House or the constituency directs that individual that's voting to vote in a certain way. So whether it's a temporary or whoever that might, you know, proxy or however that vote's going to be taken, it's coming as a result of that what we've called a certain party. How did we describe that?
Appointing organization.
Thank you. So in this case, the NCA that abstains doesn't necessarily pass their wishes on to the other for the vote. That other NCA votes his or her wishes, her position, without taking into account what the first NCA wants. Is that correct?
I would think so. Of course, you know, the NCAs do become sort of a non-stakeholder group, but they do work together. They do talk together. They do consult with each other. So
I'm just wondering, the reason I'm asking
but there's no forcing of the issue. No.
Yeah, and I'm asking that question only whether or not we need to address that, because we have addressed it on the other side. That's the thought
right.
that came
yeah.
to my mind.
I would bring it up. I would think not. Basically.
You would think that the person that makes actually casts the vote as a proxy or as a temporary would vote their own position. Is that correct?
Would vote in the community interest as they understood it.
Right, okay.
This is Ken. I think that's probably the only reasonable option anyway, because even if the voting NCA who abstains proxies the vote to the non-voting NCA, there's no obligation on that person's, on the secondary person's part to vote however they were told. And so, you know, and furthermore, if the person abstaining did so for, if you will, conflict of interest type reasons, then it would be even more inappropriate to pass the judgment along to the other person, right? To say, I want you to vote like this, but I can't do it because I have a conflict. I mean, that would not be right. Doesn't sound right anyway.
Good point. Well, based upon what I've heard, then I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Let's try out a couple of other. And I haven't done this, so I'm doing it live. let's take the case of absent. Let's say because I want to see if we can extend this principle elsewhere. And so now we've got a voting NCA who is planning, let's say, to be absent. and notifies the secretariat, I can't attend the meeting, I proxy my vote to the non-voting NCA. Everybody okay? That sounds like a similar case, okay?
Yep.
Well, it's Wolf speaking, so one question to that. Is it, is the NCA, the voting NCA, obliged to announce another NCA, or could he also announce another person, or another council member, not being an NCA? Or is that excluded?
This is Aubrey.
You know what I mean, so...
Yeah. This is Aubrey. That's certainly another option. But what that does as an option is it makes it far more complicated in that then you sort of say for absence, you get to pick one, but for obligational abstention, there's an automatic, and, you know, you end up having to have two rules. Because certainly you can't pick somebody if you're doing a obligational abstention. So for the obligational abstention, at the very least, it would have to be an automatic fallover or not at all. It can't be the House because then they're making a decision which they don't have a ability to make. So certainly for obligational abstention, I think it has to be fallover. You're right. It could be at the will and whim of the NCA herself or himself. However, that one I can see people perhaps having to have issues with in the various stakeholder groups, and it may become awkward that you're giving it to somebody in a stakeholder group, and it gets into alliances, and it's possible, but it's more complicated.
You know, this is Ken. In essence, we could think of the non-voting NCA almost like Steve Metallis's concept that he was going at when he talked in Nairobi. That is, there is somebody in my stakeholder group who is the designated hitter, right? And anytime somebody needs a proxy or a temporary alternate, the designated hitter stands in for them. And in essence, I think we're thinking about the non-voting NCA kind of like that, right? That person, that position, although it wasn't done with this in mind, we could think of it this way. The non-voting NCA is the default stand-in and is there precisely for situations in which the voting NCAs can't do their jobs. And so we make it possible, whether it's an abstention, an absence, a leave of absence, a vacancy of some other kind, any of those conditions, the non-voting NCA steps in and acts.
Yeah, I get the logic of that. This is Ray. I think if it's a default situation, then that to cover all each of the scenarios, then I think it's a reasonable remedy.
To answer your initial issue of the NOMCOM picks someone specifically for House or for House, one of the notions that always been is that in some sense the most senior of the NCAs is the one that can survive best as the homeless one. And I know some people hate it when I call it homeless, but I got into that when I was an NCA. But if the NOMCOM knows that the role of the person in that voteless chair is to A, not only be the independent voice for whatever, you know, interests of the community, but is also to be a balanced person that can, you know, vote on either side, that becomes part of their criteria in picking.
Ray, this is Ken. I believe I have enough on this particular issue to remedy the – I hate to use the word remedy, but to fix the procedures and put it back in such a way that we now do have remedies for abstentions and absences and vacancies and leaves. I think I can fix the document so that in all cases where it makes sense and by the way, the only remedy that will apply is proxy, right? We agree on that. There's no voting direction possible, and there's no temporary alternate possible. Well, I should take that back. Can the non-voting NCA be a temporary alternate?
I think that was automatic, kind of what you were saying.
Mm-hmm. Well,
for the other NCA, I think
Ken
is asking broader than that, right?
Well, the temporary alternate stands in, not just votes a particular motion, right? So let's say we have a voting NCA who is going to be absent for an extended period, a leave of absence. In that case, we could let the temporary alternate procedure take effect, where we have said the temporary alternate cannot be used because there's no, quote, appointing organization. In this case, we're defining no need for an appointing organization in the case of the non-voting NCA. So the two remedies would apply, the temporary alternate and the proxy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm guessing, I have to think about this as I go back and reconstruct this, that the difference as to which one it is probably depends on whether it is a vote, it's a single vote or a couple of votes or it's a single meeting versus it's over an extended period.
I don't disagree with the logic. Is anybody else?
No, for my part, this is Ron. I have no problem with that.
So specifically, we're looking at here 3.8.4. So Ken is going to volunteer to put in some modifying language to C, right?
Yeah. May I have a little bit more latitude to actually go back through the entire section 3.8 and 4.5 and make sure there might be other places I need to tweak things to get this right. But I'll be sure in the next draft that only that's all you'll see in red line text is the changes that were. So I'm hoping that in today's call we can accept all the other changes that have been discussed and then only concentrate on fixing the NCA thing.
It might
be more than just that one place. As
well. All right, so procedurally, here's what I'd like to run by. So we understand what you're looking to do at our direction. We will at some point today likely accept the changes to get a clean document as of the call today, and then there will be another red line version for this issue only, right? And I will, if you can give us a timer, today's Wednesday, I'm going to call end of business day Friday, because this should be a very quick review that what we're talking about here has been captured in the various places Ken feels it should be. And I'm going to call end of day Friday. If no one has a problem with what Ken recirculates, then we're looking at this section 3.8 and any other applicable section, chapter 4, if possible. Is there's not objection to it. Fair approach?
And so, this is Ron. Understanding what you've said, Chairman, what we're going to do then is that by close of business Friday, there's no pushback on any of the issues that this red line version articulates, then you will take that as a sign of accord by the work team, and you'll forward that on to the OSC accordingly?
That's right. So I'll accept it as a clean. I'll accept changes and use that for our communications to the OSC.
For my part, I think that's a good way forward.
Mm-hmm.
As I normally do, I'll describe both in the email transmittal as well as red line in the text sort of what I've done, and if there's anything that strikes me while I'm doing it that we didn't discuss, I'll annotate all that so that you'll have all the information you need to decide.
Okay, so given the changes to 3.85 that we've already discussed, that was very minor, and now this particular adjustment to the NCA language and alternates, et cetera, I'm hearing anyway that we want Ken to go ahead and accept all changes and then issue us a new document showing the red line changes. Is that correct? And then we are done with 3.8 for today.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay, mm-hmm. Good. All right, very productive. So let's move on to Chapter 4. So I'll just ask any general comments, any major issues here, or do we want to just go right to the edits? Of which the first edit I see is 4.4.4.
Agreed. 4.4.4. New edit? Agreed.
I agree with that. Any issues? None? Okay.
I've accepted it.
Okay. The next one is for me is page 7 of 19, top of the page.
4.5.2A.
Yes.
And that's the deletion of unavoidable absence?
Right.
I agree with that.
No objections?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, good.
This is Ken. Got it.
Okay, let's go to my next one I see is 4.53, which is remedies, second paragraph.
This is Ken. I think this particular matter bears on the other discussion we had. So this will likely not likely. It will be changed.
I agree.
Yes.
And I think we all understand what that change is going to be. So we're hitting the ground running. The next one I see is voting direction. Under voting direction. What we did here was there was a question on using the word consensus. It's being used so many different ways. So I think the idea here was to provide some definition, for sake of a better term, to this remedy.
I agree with clarity. This is Ron.
Okay, good. Anyone else?
Okay.
Okay, great, because I think it's used a few times coming up here.
Yeah, this is Ken. I accepted it.
Okay. Okay, so under proxy voting.
That's the same situation, and I accept it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree. Aubrey, you okay?
Yep.
Okay. Next one would fall under temporary alternate.
Well, the next one is would be section 4.5.3B, where that deletion of the NCA. Again, I think that'll come back for review as we've just discussed.
Oh, correct. Yeah, good point.
Right. So this is Ken. Both little I and little II will. I just rejected the deletion of II. It can't stay probably in the current rhythm, but it needs to come back in because we're clearly going to use it. All right.
Right. Good catch. Okay. So now we move on to temporary alternate. And again, I think that's going to be affected by what we just discussed, right?
Correct.
Okay. So next would be it's the same section, but it's now, as for me, it's page 14 of 19, number 3.
So that's small c, item 3?
Yeah. I think that changes.
Is this not the idea of the designated hitter, that example that Ken's been using?
Yes, I think we just said that that an NCA can be basically a temporary alternate for a proxy, right?
This doesn't really deal with NCA.
Oh, exactly. This is the idea of the designated hitter, where one could continually, you know, take different roles if so given. And I didn't have any problem with this when I read it through the other day. So for my part, I'm fine with this this change and with Ken's comment.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, all we're trying to say here, this is Ken, is that if a temporary alternate is named, that person cannot also be then selected as a proxy.
I got you. So that's a stacking concept. I get it.
Yeah, that's all.
Are we covering the stacking concept with regards to if both voting NCAs have to abstain? or one has to abstain and one is absent, can the non-voting NCA take both?
I was wondering if we were going to hit that one.
I wouldn't have thought of it, so I understood this one here. My initial thinking on that is, well, it's one, you know.
It's one, yeah.
Yeah, it's one. So you probably want to provide some clarity to that, Ken.
And the problem is, which one is it? And I guess that becomes a problem.
First come, first serve.
Okay.
That was a joke.
You're right. You're right.
Okay. That's fair.
I don't know how you say that.
Right. Right.
I'm sorry, this is Ken. What does the team think the right answer? What I'm going to do is take a more, perhaps more realistic case. Two voting NCAs are both absent, right?
Right.
And so what's the team's thinking about how it gets resolved? Or if you said it, I missed it.
Well, I think we're leaving it unsaid. What we're stipulating or talking out loud, really, is that the non-voting NCA only gets one, not two.
I mean, sorry, my brain is insane enough to say, you know, half vote each, but that's insane.
Right. So then it becomes a procedural question of who gets to use the non-voting NCA.
Ken, one option would be first come, first served.
I said that. Okay. I was kind of joking. But it is a fair method. I mean, I don't know if there's a procedure that in all cases the secretariat needs to be notified before the non-voting NCA can actually effectuate their position as a voting participant. So is the procedure then the first one to notify the GNSO secretariat? I don't know.
This is Ken. In the concept that it's an automatic, right? Then I think that is rational, right? The minute that I register my abstention or I signal my planned absence, we said that it was automatic. The abstention and the vacancy or absence automatically rolls, and therefore, if it's automatic, it's already been done, and therefore, the second person who comes in can't have it automatic anymore because it's already been done. That would be one way of thinking about the logic.
Yeah, but who's getting notified?
The way we have the procedures written is that the GNSO Secretariat is notified.
In all cases, without exception, the GNSO Secretariat must be notified. Is that right?
That's how we've written it, yes.
Okay, then there you go. I think that does solve it.
So that establishes time, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, yeah, okay. Does anybody have a problem with that? That's how I'll write it, and we can take a look at it.
Okay, good. Moving right along.
Okay, so this is Ken. I'm going to accept that last change in letter III.
Right.
And delete the comment. Okay.
Okay, so let's look at 4.5.4 procedures. A, notification by counselor.
This is Ken. I think that's going to... That falls into the NCA issue.
Yeah, that's going to change.
Correct.
So it's going to change in a way that delineates between the council, the stakeholder group representative, and an NCA. Two different procedures here, right?
Ray, this is Ken. I'm not 100% sure how I'm going to end up writing it exactly, but if you'll give me a little bit of latitude here, I understand the spirit and the principle, I think, that the team wishes, and I'll craft it in such a way, I hope, that you'll like it. But how it's going to exactly come out, I'm not 100% sure yet, because I have to go back and reread everything again to make sure I do this in a efficient way and also accurate way.
Right, but we know for a fact that the NCA has to notify the GNSO Secretariat. We're providing that, and we're kind of providing that direction here. Does anyone disagree with that?
Agreed.
Okay, so if that's true, then the open point here is what does a stakeholder group representative what is their procedure? And right now it says that it'll be provided, notification will be provided to the appointing organization.
With a copy forwarded to the GNSS Secretariat.
Exactly. So I think all we're doing here, if anything, is adding that the NCA voting person must notify the GNSO Secretariat, whereas the stakeholder group rep council member does not have to.
Yeah, again, this is Ken. I
just want to make sure we're on the same page.
Yeah,
the more we can get out of the way now, the less we have to, you know, worry about later.
The specific clause and where it gets inserted, you're right. What we have to do is essentially say something that is equivalent, like we said before, I deleted or House leadership for a voting NCA. That's going to stay deleted, but something like it's got to take its place so that we capture the idea that the voting NCA doesn't have a appointing organization, right? So I may have to recraft that paragraph in such a way, maybe separate the two thoughts so that voting NCA is one and something the other is the same.
Can I suggest something?
Sure.
That it probably makes sense for them to not only notify the GNSO Secretariat, but they might also want to tell the non-voting NCA. Hey, guy, you're on.
Mm. Yeah.
And that way, because in the other case, you're informing both the people that have to provide the substitute vote and the authority that has to be accept the vote. And so this is sort of a parallel construction. You have to notify the voter, okay, not the person that has to provide the vote, but the voter, and you have to provide the confirming authority.
Yeah, the only practical reason I could see that could go wrong with that is, okay, I've notified the non-voting NCA, but I forgot, or whatever reason, forgot to notify the GNSO Secretariat. So then, you know, unbeknownst to the non-voting rep, okay, the NCA person, and they walk into the meeting, and they're ready to vote, and it's like, well, wait a minute, who said you could vote? I was never notified. So now you got this discrepancy going on, versus a very simple, if you haven't notified a GNSO Secretariat, you're out. It's not going to work.
Well, that's why I was saying and.
I know and, but what if? But I'm just thinking of the scenario where they notified one but not the other. And now you've got the new NCA rep, I mean the non-voting NCA rep, under a different pretense than anybody else. No one else knows about it. Just simply because the voting NCA rep didn't follow the right procedure. Well, now we have a confusion. Do you see that scenario, or am I just...
Okay. And in the case of the stakeholder group member, it's not an and, it's an or. I don't have it in front of me at the moment.
This is Ken. I was just going to make that very point, Aubrey. It is an and there's a notification to the appointing organization with a copy to the secretariat. Same question I think Ray might apply there. What if the secretary doesn't get it, but the appointing organization does, or vice versa? I mean, does that create the same kind of a problem?
Well, I think it can, but the cross check here is you got two different people involved doing the notification. You have the affected voting person, and if they slip up, well, then now it's the chair of the appointing organization that has to slip up too. You both have to slip up for the scenario to happen.
We could. This is Ken. We could to tighten this up just a bit, because I sort of like the idea. We could ask the non-voting NCA to confirm the understanding. Now, in a sense, we've duplicated the double notification to the secretariat. So I voting NCA, I'm going to abstain. I notify the GNSO Secretariat. I notify the non-voting NCA, and that non-voting NCA is required to confirm understanding back to the GNSO Secretariat.
I kind of like it. I mean, it's not that hard. I kind of like the idea.
And to a protocol writer, a two-way handshake, hell, we use three-way handshakes. It's certainly not overkill.
I'll leave it up to the group as to whether that's overkill or not. I can go either way. It doesn't matter too much to me.
I'm always a strong supporter of checks and balances, so I like that.
Okay, this is Ken. I've noted it. I'll get. You'll see something drafted to that effect.
Okay. Thanks, Ken. Okay, that's. I think we're on to communication now.
And this is fun. I have no problem with that first sentence.
Good. I don't either.
Hmm.
Okay. There are a couple other wordsmithing going on, I think.
In the second sentence, it's a little bit of the discussion we just had.
Yes. So I don't think there's anything new there. I think if we move on to the bullet points that follow B under the next page, I think we're seeing this language being consistent to what we've already agreed upon.
This is Ron. I had no problem with any of those changes and agree with Ken's comment.
Okay. Where are you at now? I think you're on page 18 now, aren't you?
Well, no, on my screen, it's coming up something different, but the first bullet where the changes start taking place is for the specific remedies of voting directions.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, yes, right.
So I'm saying I agree with all of the changes, and
okay.
And then down in the last part, the first paragraph after the bullet begins, in order for an abstention remedy, and there's some comments that have been included with that. And
right.
So I have no problem. I agree with them.
Wolf, Aubrey, how do you feel?
I'm okay with that. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am too. Okay, good.
This is Ken. I'm accepting it and deleting the comment.
Okay,
okay. Cool. The only thing that this is Ken. The only thing I have left then would be red line changes that you'll see new that will accommodate and put into procedures what we want to do with the vote with the NCA positions as discussed.
And, Ken, this is Ron. You'll also, at the top of this document, you'll get rid of the KB note. It says KB note version 18, according to the direction, so that note will be taken away.
I'm happy to take it away. I thought I might put it in just for this next version, but we can take it out when we send it to the OSC.
That's fine.
I want to go back, if we could. I still see some redlining. I want to make sure I... In B, proxy voting, under 4.5.3 remedies, there's a sentence at the end of little I that says, the counselor to whom the vote is transferred shall exercise the vote in line with the appointing organization's stated position. Did we discuss that one?
Yes, and we agree. That's fine.
Okay, I didn't capture that that one. So good. Okay, good. Then I think that's got it.
Mm-hmm.
Now there were some. This is Ron. There were some notes that you made in your the email itself, in the body copy, Ken, where you clarify the points, and then you also had written a piece for Ray as a draft for our review. Some council resolutions as well?
Correct.
I just wanted to note that the comments of the transmittal document and the draft, as well as the GNSO resolutions, from my point of view, are fine.
Yeah, this is Ken. I will go back to the transmittal letter and, of course, when we transmit the documents, I do have to make the adjustments to the NCA discussion in that, yeah, obviously, and I'll do that, and you'll get another version of that document as well.
But I guess my question, this is Ron, my question to the rest of the team, does anyone else have any problems with what we're seeing now before us? understanding that we will see a red lines with any of the NCA languages we've discussed.
Yeah.
All right, so I think we're feeling comfortable as a group here. Now, what is the group's expectations on getting this assuming the edits that we expect that we know are coming, okay, are okay. What is the expectation on getting the information out over to the OSC?
Well, for my part, this is Ron. As I mentioned earlier, Ray, I think that the way forward that you recommended is the way to go. By Friday, close of business, no pushback from the team. You should then use these transmittal documents that have been which we redline, remove the red lines and send them on. With that, actually, a note of closure that, in fact, our work is complete.
Right. I agree with that. Ken, does that give you time to? Is it enough time for you here? I think 20, because we have discussed the issues here, we really know what's coming on your changes. I think 24 hours is enough for anyone on the work team to review it, and if there's a substantive issue, to bring it forth. So with that said, Ken, is there enough time for you to do what's necessary here?
This is Ken. Absolutely.
Okay. So I think that's a good plan. So you're counting on your chair to get this stuff over to the OSC Friday night, Saturday morning, something to that effect.
That would be fine.
Okay.
And this is Ken, if I might. So let's see. That if the OSC had it, let's just say for talking purposes, Monday, 24, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They've given themselves typically 10 days. I don't know if that's 10 calendar days or work days, but that would actually put it to June 2nd. Now, the deadline for council resolutions and documents for the 10th council meeting is the 3rd. It's tight, but it's possible that these two resolutions that I've shown now as A and B could be made into a single resolution and encompass all five documents. But we would have to ask the OSC if they think they can review it and approve it, essentially, for inclusion in the 10 June council meeting.
And this is Avery. The question I would bring up is, have we passed anything through the OSC that didn't get changed?
No, it hasn't. I mean, I don't know for sure, but obviously we've had good, healthy, and constructive feedback.
No,
I know you're not saying that, but I think so. You're saying, you know, we should anticipate feedback coming back, but I think that raises a good point. I mean, I'm just going to talk out loud here. We've been provided a deadline, okay, of June 1st. As far as we are concerned, we've done our work here. If the OSC wants to change some things, I think they have the. Do we? Are we giving them the right? Are we giving the OSC the right to go ahead and make changes that they would like to make without having to come back to us?
This is Ken. As a point of order, you have already done it. It's already precedent. There's already precedent set. There were some titles, column headings, and other things. There was some language changed by the OSC, and those changes are already in the documents that are going forward to the council in sections 2.1, 2.4, and in Chapter 5.
All right, so I think maybe a qualifying statement in our transmittal letter that says, given the time frames involved, et cetera, I don't know if we want to put in the word non-substantive or non-material changes that felt by the members of the OSC. The GCOT anticipates that changes such as this will be made.
I think it's fine, Zafri. I think that's fine for non-substantive. As a member of the OSC, if we start to want to change it in a substantive way, I know my inclination would be we have to send it back.
Okay.
Yeah, but now, this is Ron. I'm also an OSC member. I would agree with that. And I would just add one other point. I think the good news is that the work done on the OSC side has been relatively responsive, meaning that if, in fact, they receive this on the OSC receives this on Monday, I would think before the close of business of Friday, we will have seen the changes, comments, and so forth. So we'll know pretty quickly
if there's any issues of substance.
Okay, so yeah.
Just one more quick thought. I put this in my email. The OSC has already seen and reviewed the Chapter 4 on voting, and
mm-hmm.
so it's not the first time they will have seen that. And in fact, this revision we're sending captures some ideas that came from their original input.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think we're going to be good on in terms of the timing, and I think the transmittal letter just has to make those notes. But I would be a little bit cautious about giving them too much latitude. We've seen that they've tried to exercise that latitude without having that approval from us or that authorization from us already on a couple of counts.
Mm-hmm.
So just be careful in the transmittal letter that it's quite clear that non-substantive changes are welcome in the interest of time.
Mm-hmm.
Anything substantive absolutely must return to the OSC or to
okay.
the GCOT.
That was exactly my question as to how the work team members felt about non-substantive versus substantive changes, and you've answered that. So anything substantive, we do have an anticipation will be sent back to us from the OSC.
Yep.
Good. That's the clarification I was looking for. We had an issue arise with the SOI-DOI, which you guys are probably already familiar with, and it has to do with the question that Steve Metallitz originally raised with having to do with ICAM preparing a list of contractors, a public list. We briefly discussed it, thought, while a valid point, not necessary or not appropriate for reasons we had to include into the GNSO Council Rules of Procedures. And I remember there were a couple of reasons why. I remember mine had to do with the fact that, these are the GNSO Council Rules of Procedure, not the ICANN Rules of Procedure. So how are we going to direct ICANN through the Rules of Procedure to prepare a list? But nonetheless, there were a couple issues like that where we thought, okay, yeah, the question that being raised was valid, but wasn't within our purview to try and address through these Rules of Procedure. Nonetheless, Steve brought that comment back again, where I had to go back and do some research. I talked to Rob and Julie and a few other staff members to try and clear the cobwebs out of my head as to why we didn't put in that language. So I do want to just mention that discussion took place, and I think where it ended up is the OSC is not going to approve the SOI-DOI. What is that, Chapter 5, Ken?
Yeah, I don't think that's exactly correct.
No,
right.
I can my take on it, Ray, as a member of the OSC again, is that it is being sent forward with a recommendation that staff be instructed to please develop that list.
But in the meantime, OSC is not recommending for council to adopt the SOI-DOI.
That's not my understanding.
No,
that's what I'm looking
this
for.
This is Julie.
Okay.
I've been following this closely, so. What Philip has asked the OSC is that the SOI-DOI procedures go ahead, except for the sections affected by Steve Metallitz's request, that is the list, that there should be a list developed of all of those who have contracts with ICANN, that the council would and could proceed on accepting the procedures without that section and would request staff to investigate how to do the list and privacy issues and so on and set a date for staff to do that, at which point once that list was established, that section would go back into
okay.
the procedures.
I'm asking a slightly different question.
Okay,
question.
Yeah, but I also want to point out that I have not seen a response from Steve Metallitz. My understanding from Steve's messages was that he was not wanting the procedures to go forward, this section to go forward at all, unless the list question was addressed.
Exactly. So that now we're saying the same thing. So that's what I caught to be Steve's view. And actually, I came back to Steve to the OSC and said, well, that's really not the intention of the GCOT to hold up the SOI-DOI until staff does this work. That was really not the intention. So I'm curious now. So where is it? The SOI-DOI procedures specifically are being approved except for those affected by the list?
That was Philip's suggestion.
Okay.
But Philip has given until the 23rd of May for the OSC to respond to his recommendation.
Okay, great. I got it now. I understand. So was everybody pretty much aware of this already, this little exchange that happened on the SOI-DOI? Or is this new information to anybody?
No.
Okay.
I know that.
Because I generally do not speak on behalf of the GCOT to the OC, but given the time issue here, I did so. But at the same time, knowing that Ron's on there, and actually, Aubrey, I didn't know that you were on there, but now I know that. So you guys are seeing my correspondences anyway. Okay, so that I was kind of banking on that.
No issue there, Ray.
This is Ken. I just want to chime in that I have a note myself to bring this subject up on the 24th, the day after the 23rd's deadline, and see where the OSC is on this subject. I mean, if they say that Chapter 5 cannot go forward at all for approval until this issue is remedied, then I can fix the resolution to take that one document out, and then that's sort of the Group A would then be just two documents that would be term limits and the Board of Seat Elections. Maybe that one would come in later at some time.
Right. The only thing I want to make clear, because you guys are in the OSC and I'm not, or involved with that and I'm not, is, okay, I just want to understand for my own well-being here, if by chance the OSC decides to hold out all of Chapter 5, that does not go within the spirit of what the GCOT wanted.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to happen, Ray.
All right, but I just want to make that clear.
Sure.
I think
we're all on the same page there. We want these just to be processed and passed on to the GNSO right away. There's no reason to hold this up.
Okay, so I just want to make sure, in case that question gets asked to me.
Yeah, we would
argue
that.
Okay, very good.
I certainly would.
Okay, very good.
I flower that I am.
All right, so any other business we have here? If not, Aubrey, I want to thank you for going through and raising those questions you did on the most recent documents by Ken. And Ken, thank you for your hard work. I wanted to hold out this just for all of your back of your minds. Let's hold out next Wednesday if at all possible in case we get some early pushback and we need to have a meeting. Or it doesn't have to be a Wednesday. Let's just all keep in mind over the next 2 weeks, if there is something substantive that comes back to us, we may need to call a meeting. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough.
With that, I will ask to adjourn the meeting and end the call, end the recording.
Thanks.
Great. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.